Blog Talk Radio.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from the Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the shape of a war theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Report from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
Hello, and welcome to Provocative Thoughts, intimately known as PT, striving to awaken those who are asleep, stimulate those who are awakened, feed those who are starving, and nurture those who seek to know. I am your host, Carlton Steeves, a self-proclaimed student of life in the search, discovery, and revelation of life on life's terms. First, I'd like to thank We Talk Productions for allowing me to host this show. I'd also like to thank the creator for allowing me to be. You can contact the show by dialing 909-265-9215. Please press the number 1 to speak. Again, you can contact the show by dialing 909-265-9215. Please press the number 1 to speak. You can reach us on the internet at www.blogtalkradio.com. Go to search and type in ReTalk Productions and listen to the show live. You can also contact us on Facebook at Provocative Thought PT Community Organization. Tonight's topic, the narcissist. Our guest, Mr. Paris Hardin, a contemporary philosopher. Our special guest, Ms. Empress L. Find yourself in a relationship with a narcissist. Would you really be in a relationship, or would you be a function of the relationship relevant to the needs and the desires of the narcissist. Does a narcissist make a good partner? What about a good business partner? What about a good friend? What is a narcissist, and why should we be concerned? What is a narcissist? Dictionary says a narcissist is a person who has an excessive interest in or admiration for themselves. We typically all call these people selfish or very selfish. WebMD says a narcissist, it's human nature to be selfish and boastful now and then. But true narcissists take it to an extreme. They don't just have extra self-confidence. They don't value others' feelings or ideas and ignore others' needs. They tend not to perceive that they themselves may have a mental health problem and are less likely to seek an evaluation for treatment. Some people admit to being narcissistic. This was found in a research study from the Ohio State University. And the researchers say they probably are proud of it and don't see looking out for number one as a flaw, looking out for themselves. Causes. The exact cause is not known, but there are several theories. Parents who put their children on a pedestal and shower them with endless praise can plant a seed of narcissism, a recent study found. There's a line between being nurturing and supportive and inflating an ego. But again, the opposite is true. Children who are ignored or abused tend to be self-centered almost as a survival instinct. They feel the need to look out for themselves because no one else will. Treatment. There's no cure, but therapy can help. The goal is to build up the person's poor self-esteem and have more realistic expectations of others. There aren't drugs to treat this mental disorder, but depression and anxiety sometimes go hand in hand with narcissism. And there are helpful drugs for those conditions, not for the narcissistic condition itself. So, Mr. Hart?
Yes, sir.
Hello?
The call. Yes,
yeah,
sir.
Welcome to the show.
Welcome. You're absolutely right with what you said from the definition, but it stems on so many levels beyond just the relationship, as you said, with work and being able to recognize the condition. And it's kind of hard to recognize the condition because they're masters at dual face. They've mastered manipulation. They've mastered lying. They have mastered protecting themselves. So it's very hard to distinguish early on, especially in a romantic situation, is because while you're thinking that you're pursuing, they have already chosen you and picked you for a particular reason, and that is to feed off of you, depending on your personality type as being somewhat submissive or codependent or needy in some way, or in some way that you have what they don't have. You may have the compassion, the empathy, the sympathy, the reality of being in a relationship and dealing with people where they lack that. So they compensate by getting with people who have that, but it's not to actually learn or have that. It is to exploit that and rob them of that trait because they're unable to exempt that trait themselves.
So go ahead. No, finish, go ahead. My bad.
As your opening statement said, as far as business, in our society, we believe that some of those traits are needed for business because you want someone that's ruthless, who doesn't have a care or concern for other people's needs, but just set on a goal, and that goal is to win. And we call some of those people celebrities, stars, presidents, politicians, successful winners, but not knowing exactly how they're winning until they have left their bloodbath and aftermath, and then people start to question, you know, the validity of their being, their existence. So it's a hard personality to distinguish, because we all have some traits, praise us, and, you know, leadership skills and achieving is something that's sought after in this society. But the difference is being able to have a balance where you have compassion for your fellow partners, peers, you know, people, and even religious-wise, you know, because on the spiritual side, it's almost as if they're claiming themselves to already be God, you know, and that's a whole other topic. But from my studies and what I've been seeing, there are some relations to narcissism compared to witchcraft because of the manipulation and the stealing and the robbing of one's essence, you know, that giving that you have, and they reduce you to the point where you become the person questioning your sanity. And that's part of their plan. It's part of the plan is that. But not in every situation. Maybe in a business situation, it may be something different where they want to lower your expertise, where you're questioning yourself so that they can excel. So I don't think it's something easily detectable until you're absolutely in it. And when you're in it, I think it's almost too late.
Oh, that was my question. You took my question away from me. So why are people attracted to people with narcissistic attributes, even if they're not narcissistic per se, because apparently it's a diagnosis. But say
right.
somebody has some narcissistic, how would you be attracted to a person like that?
Well, they seem to exert some type of power, physical attraction, sexual attraction, confidence, you know, all these things we're trained to look at as leadership qualities. And so, you know, if you don't have that or you lack that self-confidence or you lack certain things, you may be looking for that. But because of the society that we live in, we're always chasing that person that seems to be better by what society poses to be a better, well-rounded, well-equipped person. You know, the person that's a go-getter, they're going to get it done, they're going to do it. This person is a doctor, he's a lawyer, you know, looking at these traits of achievement, but overlooking the nature side of it, the natural side of a person, the things that we really need. So it's kind of funny because it's like we go after love, but while we're chasing love, we're chasing success. And most times we're chasing the success before we chase the love, because that's what we're trained to do. As far as for women, and as far as for men, men are trained to exert that or exude that, you know, trait. So I think it's not something very easily detectable because they are very mastered at hiding their true intent. You won't know their true intent until you have been, you know, snared into their trap.
Okay, so the picture that you're painting that I hear you painting is that a narcissist can behave differently, can mask their behavior until a certain point at which I guess they gotten what they thought that they needed or can't get what they need from the individual, then the real person shows up. Is that how it goes? Is that what you're saying?
That is exactly it. Some psychotherapists say that they give them a time limit. Some have said some can go for 6 months, depending on what level they are at. And then some say it could go on for years, you know, 30 years, because they're feeding off of this person. So it's basically they're trying to see how long you can suffer. So as long as you can suffer and stay in a relationship, they feed off of you, but you will never receive what you may need from that romantic relationship, if it's a romantic relationship. If it's a job situation, then their job is to wipe out all competition and succeed. So
right.
when we see celebrities like Jay-Z, Beyonce, and many others who have achieved wealth through that personality trait, you know, it's because of the tenacity that their brain is wired to only go after one particular goal, and that is to, you know, fulfill that desire. Whereas other people may stop and think about, you know what, I love my job, but I got my family over here. They're not going to think about family. They're going to think about they want the trophy of winning. They want the trophy of winning, and their family is just an extension of a trophy. They're not real to them, but it's like, you know, let's say the corporate guy who goes to a party. He's going to have a family, because if the top people there start talking about family, he needs a family. The difference is the top people there may have a – huh?
So you're saying that they mimic cultural norms.
They do. They do exactly that until they get what they need, until they need a change, until they can't beat on you any longer, or until they can't hold up that facade. And then they have to cut you loose. But their way of cutting you loose, not per se directly cutting you loose, but it's indirectly where you begin to pull away. And that's when they start to feed, because they know that you're in some type of pain. So they're not just going to come out and cut you loose. They're going to start a process of elimination, you know, where they may, all of a sudden you're in this romantic relationship, everything's going great. And all of a sudden, this person just turns completely cold. No communication, no, you know, affection, none of the things that started off in the very beginning. And that's their feeding process, because you're going to question. And then that's when it kicks in for that type of noise.
So we could say that the novelty wore off? Did the novelty wear off or something like that? Or what? How did they get everything and say it started declining in 6 months? Just what exactly happened in 6 months that the person decided they had no need for another person? What type of thing could have happened emotionally? You know, talking about a relationship.
Right. In a relationship, it may be that they may mimic being in love, caring for you, having concern. That's not real. That's not real. In fact, based off of the studies and the doctors and psychotherapists and psychologists and others that have studied this have found out that the truth is some fears of these people are abandonment. So instead of gravitating to having someone that's there for you, they start the process of saying, you know what, one day you're going to leave me, but I'm going to start the process, and I'm going to leave you, knowing that they really want someone there, but they're going to sabotage the relationship because they need that control. They don't need to know that someone can leave them. So they start that process, I'm going to leave you, and they're, you know, turn the whole relationship upside down. And in a matter of no time, too, you know, you'll be stuck there thinking, I'm really in love, and I care about this person, and I'll work through whatever. And they have already cut you off. In fact, they probably cut you off before the process of elimination began. They probably already started that process. But you won't know it, though.
Right. So basically, you were never signed to the team. You were just allowed to come on the court to play, but you don't really have a contract. You're just out there playing the game.
Absolutely.
And they're going to cut you from the team.
Okay,
so, and they, you know, some of the information I've been reading about narcissistic people, you know, we all have an idea about, you know, we call the person self-centered or, you know, uppity, you know, snobbish and stuff like that. We call those people, you know, self-centered people that they think that everything that they do is the it to do, they're always right, you don't know what you're talking about, and, you know, so forth like that, you know. So everything is centered around whatever they think or whatever they want. So that's a narcissistic personality traits. So this person, is this person loveless, or, you know, do they love, let me start with themselves, or the person that they're, say you have a very intimate relationship with a narcissist, or can you, or it looks that way, and you're saying it's not love, is it lust, is it anything? I mean, is anything there, anything that's remotely like, you know, the relationship that you know, people all might be accustomed to in terms of not being used by someone. It's a mutual relationship, because apparently so far we're saying that narcissists will not have a mutual relationship with anybody.
Well, a lot of information that you can look at from the internet or books and clinical studies have said that they're pathological liars and that you will never win their approval. It's all based on them. It's not based on you. You're just a tool. You're just
right.
a tool. And that's it. Now, they can mimic a normal relationship easily, because they gain information from the people that they're with. They're gonna, you know, they're gonna listen and find out exactly what you need. Whatever it is. You know. You need love? All right, I'm gonna give you that in the very beginning. You need attention, I'm gonna give you that. You know. That's how they feed. You know, you're not give and take relationship where you think that
right.
the person you're with is gonna give. You're not. You're there as the tool. You're there for their need. And that
you give, they take.
Right.
So they say are the causes. They're not sure the cause of this condition, but they theorize there are several theories, and some of the things they say that parents would put their children on a pedestal, you know, create that type of personality, and then children who are ignored, as I said in the beginning. Or abuse tend to be self-centered as a survival instinct. That kind of sounds it may not be the best thing, but you can kind of understand a child who's been betrayed by adults and people in authority, right? That he would be or
right.
she would be as a survival instinct, be a bit self-centered. You would have trust issues,
right.
you know?
And not all... Not everyone that has this personality may be extremely bad, because some things are learned behavior. Like we said, you might just be that child. You grew up lonely. You know, you had a certain type of upkeeping coming, you know, from your father, mother, or certain things that have happened, and that's just a protection mode. But the one
right.
thing that seems to sit out the most is the lack of having empathy or sympathy or compassion or a connection with others. And that's one of the most alarming parts, having the feelings and
right.
emotions. And, you know, they say that a lot of our psychopaths, murderers, killers, have this personality trait. You know,
right.
I just
learned that is one of the attributes. That's true.
One of the attributes
of sociopaths and, psychopaths. That's an attribute
right.
in the Machiavellian. They have that attribute. They don't have any concern
right.
for the emotions of other people outside of them. Machiavellians
right.
and the in theory, and the psychopath. That's true. They share
right.
that.
I'd like to see what you know. What Empress has on this also, because she has a huge knowledge in this background of this. I'd like to, you know, hear her point on this as well.
Okay, Empress L, you'd like to share with the listening audience?
Greetings, brethren. Greetings, sister.
Greetings.
I've been listening and been very blessed by what's been said thus far. It's like spot on, you know. There are a few points that I would like to bring out, and that's, if I may kind of piggyback a little bit on what Brother Paris was saying about the pathological liars. One of the major red flags, if you will, for these narcissists, you have three different levels of liars in psychology. Anyone that's studied abnormal psych, or you can look up abnormal psych and see that you start with your liar, you start with your pathological liar, and you start with your what's called pseudologue. And, of course, pseudo meaning false, logue meaning word. That's like everything that they say, everything that they do is based on falsehood. And unfortunately, you all were talking about abuse and things. Sometimes it was not necessarily abuse or neglect, but there are many times where youngsters were in this, were forced to be in this place of facade, keeping up with the Joneses, we call it, or the families that were playing a marriage that was this doomed and hiding different things. And so what they did is they learned to lie until they created these fantasy worlds around them. And if you weren't in their fantasy, then you were expendable. And these, if it's not checked early, can grow into what you see these lawyers and these, excuse me, these pseudo lawyers and these pseudo surgeons and these pseudo doctors killing people, but they're actually practicing medicine for like 10 and 20 years before a pattern is noticed and people start checking and they're like, wait a minute, when did you graduate Harvard and when did you go to Notre Dame? And those type of behaviors, we ignore the red flags. Also, so that is one thing to definitely look at, whether you're dealing with a pseudologue, somebody who just, you ever seen those people that just can't tell the truth, even when their backs are against the wall, they know they've been caught, and they're still trying to fight it? Those are very dangerous people. They will fight you. They become violent. They do things. They snap. Those are the people that snap. Like, oh, my gosh, they were so sweet and so perfect. I thought it was the other person doing it. I could have never seen them doing this. That is your narcissist. That is your narcissist. There's also what's called the shamanic perspective, and that's the witchcraft, if you will, or spiritual perspective that Brother Paris also touched on. And this shamanic perspective is dealing with people who use narcissism as a way to be a prey. And they prey on, I guess you asked the question, brother, about how and what they look for. They look for vulnerabilities. They look for people who are empathetic. They literally, you're a mark if you're empathetic. They look for people who care. Usually it's because they have a lack of caring in themselves, not because that they couldn't get it rightfully, but they feel entitled. And that goes to that Machiavellian, if you will, mindset, right, that you feel entitled to love and you feel entitled that somebody should bow down and worship you, that you should feel entitled, right, that somebody should give their life for you, should be your slave. And it doesn't matter if you're a husband, if it doesn't matter if you're a wife, I'm not gender specific on this. Narcissism, right, has no gender preference. Narcissism has, right, no class preference, no color preference. You know, right, it's a scourge, if you will. Can you be friends with a narcissist? Yes, if you are one of those people in the shamanic perspective where you actually seek out people to control you. Some people actually seek that out. And I mean outside of the bonds of sadomasochism and, you know, bondage and being slaves, you know, willingly. People actually would, you know, they say trust the devil that you know. They would rather trust the devil that they know rather than allow themselves to have the love that they deserve, you know, because they don't know that they deserve it. And so we get into this, unfortunately, this conundrum, this cycle of self-hatred and self or spiritual mutilation, if you will, even generational curse, where we keep doing the same thing and same thing and same thing and don't know how to break it. But that's because we've never really dealt with the taboo of how to identify it. And that's the key. What do you do once you identify it? But I love that person. No, you love what that person makes you think that you need that person to do for you. You're in love with the facade. Can that person be loved? Absolutely. Usually it takes a bigger narcissist to out-narcissize, I guess the word is, out-narcissize them, where you realize you're not the biggest chicken in the coop, you know, and then that can become dangerous in and of itself. So when you're talking about doing business, I'd like to bring another level of narcissism in the workplace, and this is called bullying. We like to try to put nicer labels on darker things. You're a narcissist. You're a bully. That's what you are. You're not motivated. You're really not a go-getter. You're using the company just like you're using the people. It's just a means, right, to your goal. and your goal is self-gratification, ego, enhancement. You want to be praised. You want to be the all in all. At the end of the day, you want them to be able to say, oh my gosh, we couldn't have done it without you. The hero complex, the God complex, if you will. And
right.
A lot of supervisors, unfortunately, people don't realize that they are not only being under a narcissist, but they're being bullied. And one of the main reasons that they, main ways that they use is called gaslighting. And a lot of people, like, what? Gaslighting is the method of actually taking what you know, using superiority incorrectly, and turning it around to make you actually second guess what you know, i.e. work protocols, your own job, your own merit, your own worth, also downplaying your position or downplaying your work or not giving you certain opportunities where you are deserving of opportunities, i.e. promotion or project,
right.
Because they know that you are the threat. So that's another level of narcissism. It's bullying.
Mm.
And if you look at it in all forms of the ways, it's bullying. I'm bigger than you. I'm stronger than you. I'm more powerful than you. And you ask the question, well, how do you know? Because I'm with you. Because you're with me. You belong to me. You're mine. That's the narcissist way of thinking. And the best way to get out of it is to cut the symbiotic relationship that they create, like a leech. Pour the salt. And the salt that they can't stand is awakening. You have to awake to realize that you are nobody's slave, that you are nobody's trash can, that you are nobody's second guess, that you are nobody's second opinion, that you deserve more. And you can't save everybody. You can't. And once you realize that about yourself, you'll start to be free. And you'll start to see them act out and lie and play the victim role, because that's what narcissists do when they're caught. All of a sudden, they're the victim and you're the worst thing walking. But we're on to that. We're not blind like we used to be. So I don't want to maximize the conversation, but I did want to chime in with just a few other perspectives and let people know that sometimes they're dealing with this from childhood. And, you know, I always say these things become the norm. Just because it's the norm doesn't make it okay.
Right.
Somebody mistreating you, somebody making you feel less than, doesn't make it okay.
Right.
You know, it just makes it a fact. But that fact
right.
is incorrect. And we need to
right.
we need to abolish that, especially in our communities, quote, unquote, the African-American communities. We need to take the taboo out of these topics and commend brothers like yourself who are putting it out there, because so many people are suffering, you know. So many people.
Yes. Let me ask you a question before you hang up, before you go away. So in terms of narcissism and using people, and I'm going to take this around to a social, political, economical base. When we look at oppression, would you say that oppression is a form of narcissism?
Absolutely. I mean, it's one of the greatest and, if you will, extreme forms of narcissism. It's narcissism unchecked, if you really
right.
want to think about it. Everything has a root. Everything. Whether it's from space that starts with a nebulae, a star, gas, or you start with a seedling, a seed to a seedling, everything has a root. What's the root? Somebody or a conglomerate of people were allowed to be narcissists, and they were unchecked. They were bullies.
Right.
They were terrorists.
Right.
But that's another topic for another show. And so, yes, which we see global narcissism, you know, propaganda, superiority complexes, all of these,
right.
you know,
right.
throughout history, and even within
right.
ourselves, in our own ranks.
Right. Okay. We appreciate that. And
give
you can chime in anytime you feel you know, you want to.
Thank
All
you.
Right?
I appreciate it. You guys have a good night.
All right. Thank you. All right. Mr. Hartman.
Yes, sir. I want to add something as far as for relationships, some of the signs that I found out just recently, something called ghosting. And ghosting is when, ghosting is the process when the narcissist is leaving you, but you don't know it. They will start to shut down. If you're in a sexual, you know, relationship, that shuts down. Your needs shut down.
Okay.
All of a sudden, you're not existing. They don't see you after a certain point. You're not there. You know, if you're in a family environment, you're not involved in any of the family activities. You know, your emotions. And if you do speak out on how you're being hurt, all of a sudden you're going to be victimized and say, oh, always you, you're just a whiner, you're this, you're that. Anything to demean you, but their main thing, the last thing that they do is to eliminate you in a process that makes you feel like you're not even there, but you're present. And they will use other people to support that. They use children, they use family, they use anyone, because what they're waiting for is for you to act out in a rage. If you're in a, you know, romantic relationship, or even in a business, you're gonna say, you know what, I'm getting tired of this stuff and I'm getting pissed off. That moment that you exclude, you know, some form of anger, they're gonna use that against you, because they're building a case against you at all times. No matter what you do, they're constantly building a case. They're gonna stay calm and collected because they need you to come out of pocket, because they feed off of that. They need you to be in a rage, because they strive off of that rage. They're feeding. They're not feeding off of your calmness. If you stay calm, then it really irritates them. If you don't give them anything to feed off of, they get irritated. And even in that, they have to start their process of elimination. They have to find something for you to bellyache about so that they can feed off you, because they're going to stay calm. They're going to act like you're crazy. And they're going to have everyone else around you thinking you're crazy, because they're always calm. They're successful. You know, they look like achievers. And meanwhile, you look like a failure. You look like you're not strong enough to exist. So that's part of their process of ghosting, you know, especially in relationships and a marriage. You know, they use the children. They vicariously live through the children. Even the children are not loved. The children have benefits, but they're not personally loved.
Right.
Until those children start to become self-sufficient, then those children are no longer needed. They're no longer needed. Now, I'm not saying that they don't love or show love. It's not the type of love that we would think of love. You know, that what they call agape love, that, you know, you give your all. No. They only give their all for what they need. As soon as that child gets old enough, that child's going to find out that, you mean to tell me all this time I thought mommy or daddy felt this way about me, and really they don't? You know, as soon as you become dependent, be independent from them, it's going to show. It's going to show. Because they always need something to feed off. They always need something to feed off. It's not your strength. It's your weakness. So if you have any sense of confidence and strength, as the Empress said, the moment you are awakened, that's the moment that they start to feed. Because you're conscious to what they're doing. You know, most psychologists say, which I disagree with, is that the only way that you can deal with these type of people is to cut your losses. I have a different approach to that. I say that they need to be dealt with on the level that they deal with other people, because so many people want to condition them as if they have a problem, but because they have this problem, you're supposed to take the L. I say, how about sometimes you give them exactly what they're looking for? You know, they want the pain, give it to them. Give them that pain. You know, let them see exactly what they're going to get, because otherwise they're getting away with it. It's similar to the government. It's exactly like the government. The government is going to continue doing what they're doing until someone stands up and say, you know what, we're about to hurt you. But no one's going to hurt them.
Let me get this right. So, what manner are we talking about dealing with a narcissist, and what type of situation? Because we have narcissistic behavior in all aspects of life, like you're saying. And capitalism seems to be, in my opinion, very narcissistic in itself. So now we're talking about a narcissistic relationship between a man and a woman. So, give me the audience example of how you feel you respond or, you know, give somebody what they, energy that they return, the type of energy that they put out to somebody who's narcissistic. Like, give us an example.
One example I seem to feel as though should be used is to let them know that they're what they are not, to let them know the truth. Don't spare them anything. Let them know that, no, you're not the best, and you're losing the best. If you feel as though you're the best, let them know, you know, you're losing. I'm not losing anything. Take their power away from them. But all the psychiatrists say, for you to walk away and take an L, when you walk away and take an L, they think that they've won. You'll walk away broke, brokenhearted. You know, I just learned recently today, just from a YouTube channel, where one of the psychiatrists said that 38% of marital relations end up in suicide because one partner was in a relationship with a narcissist. That this person went insane, that they couldn't take it no more, that they killed themselves. Now, when that happens and they find out that, you manipulated and you tortured this person, they're not punished for that. So they're never punished. So it's like society has given them a go-kart to continue until someone comes along. The sad part is when someone does come along and fight back, that person is treated like a demon. That person is treated like the worst person on the planet.
Right.
And sentenced and prosecuted because mimic a calm behavior as if they've never done anything wrong. And it's only that way because we have a society and government that does the exact same thing. So it's like they have to support that, because if they supported some type of punishment for someone who is lying to you or someone that is pretending to be something that they're not, there's no punishment for it. But the thing is, it's a lie, because there is punishment for pretending to be what you're not. If you pretended to be a broker and took money from people, if you pretended to be a lawyer, if you pretended to be a banker and you're not, they will sentence you. But if you pretend to be a lover, a mother, a father, a companion, and you hurt other people, there's no sentence.
I think they have what they call grounds for divorce for that, if you're married.
But you're still taking an L. You're still taking an L. They're not taking an L. You're taking the L. Because divorce is exactly what they want. They feed off of that energy. So you're still taking an L. You're taking an L of your personal life that you've given. No matter how many years, months, days, whatever it may be, that energy that you gave, that love, compassion, you know, friendship, those days, those minutes, those hours, they fed off of you and stole that, and they're happy with that.
Right, but you can't get that back.
You can't get it back.
You can stay in a relationship for 100 years, you're never going to get it back, and you're never going to get it.
That is absolutely true.
Excuse me. Okay.
Yes.
So, well, you guys really went there. Okay. So, one, there's grounds for divorce on neglect for marital due diligence. Okay?
Right.
And there is grounds where you can empower yourself by recording and video recording and audio recording. They don't care. They don't think you'll actually go through with it. Build your case. Please understand, this person does not love you. They are the enemy. Okay? Doing things physically to them, I mean, instant gratification. But will it do something permanently to them? No. I will tell you, the best revenge in the face of somebody who refused to love you is to find or allow yourself to be with a person that will truly love you and appreciate everything that they took advantage of, that will be that healing for you. No, you cannot get back what you lost. But I always say, forget the mistake and learn the lesson, right? Not saying forget what they did, but don't focus on the mistake. We know we made a mistake. I was in a marriage for 10 years. That was a mistake. I remarried. Big mistake. But what was the lesson? The lesson taught me this doesn't feel comfortable. I'm more than this. This is not good. This is not healthy. And the biggest thing that I could have ever done, I'm telling you, the look on their faces when they lose, and the way that they lose, you're out and you're happy and you're living. You're doing everything they told you that you would never be able to do, because remember, you're not good enough for anybody else, only them, right? That is the best way to serve revenge. So you love on your new woman, and you love on your new man, and you love them hard. And one thing, don't project the nonsense of the idiot to the angel, male or female. You walk hand in hand, and you have romance, and you have new children, and you have new family, and you make that old family want to be part of that family because they see, hey, wait a minute, I want that. And make them work hard for it. Don't give it up so easily. That is how you serve revenge. You serve revenge by loving on you harder than you loved into that bottomless pit of an individual. Number one.
That sounds good to me. That sounds good to me. What do you think about that, Mr. Harden?
I have no complaint against that, but I guess coming from, no, I won't say that. I believe everything that she's saying, right. I think that sometimes when you're so far in, which is probably the reason the psychiatrists say what they said about the suicide rate and also saying that you'll lose your sanity, is that you'll get so far in that you don't see a way out and you just want to fight back. And sometimes that physical may be the only thing that you can see because you don't see no other way, because these people have programmed you to believe you're not going to ever have what you want. You're never going to get it, you know. So you may get to that point where you just feel like there's no hope. Now, fortunately, the statistics hasn't shown anything detrimental, you know. On the reverse side, yes, there's mass suicides, and then people finding out that they're married to this type of person. But as far as for revenge and murdering these type of people, it's kind of low. It's really low. So to me, it just says that they get away with murder, basically. You know, but it's just me personally. Maybe I'm just an angry person inside, but I think that after a while, you know, you're going to get what you're asking for. You know.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Maybe
it's possible,
I'm not as.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's possible.
Or maybe I'm just an angry person per se, because I don't like people getting over on me. Once I find out that I've given you my all and you just played me, and you're going to get away with even more. You know, I'm the type of person, I'm going to give you exactly what you're asking for. I don't think that you should escape. Now, that doesn't mean I want to commit murder or anything, but I feel as though you should feel some pain. You should physically feel some pain, because the people that you hurt has physically, spiritually, and mentally felt pain. You know, so.
Okay, well.
The car. Huh?
Is the narcissist in any pain?
Lots of pain.
I'm about to say the same thing. They're absolutely positively in pain, and that's why they're doing what they're doing. But
right. So
those are for the professionals.
Why we
want
to pour more pain on them? Why
wow,
pour more fuel on the fire?
Because they lack the ability to receive the love. The love is given, but they refuse to receive it. They strive off of the pain, but the problem is that the pain that they should receive, from my standpoint, is never given. It's never given. And I can't, in fact, I take that back. I can't say never, because I'm quite sure there's probably some people out there who are probably in prison right now for going through what they've been through in that type of situation. And you know what? Maybe we may have to do another show, because when we normally talk about narcissism, we normally, most people relate it to men, and very seldom do they relate it to women. But I'm kind of curious for how many women are in prison for being abused by a narcissistic man, and they committed homicide, you know, murdered this person. really hurt this
That's
person
interesting.
Because of that.
What is that?
Actually,
well,
there are
they...
tons of statistics on this. For instance,
yeah.
if I may.
Go ahead.
Women who've had pimps, women who have been in abusive relationships with partners. And remember, abuse, domestic violence is not only striking, but it's also mental. It's verbal now. And so those women have finally said, look, I can't deal with it. I can't do this anymore. And they've struck back. Or it started as verbal and it started as mental. And then it, you know, again, that narcissism unchecked, it became physical. And they said, enough, no more. Rather than just leaving, you ask yourself, well, why didn't you just leave? I think that we have to be careful not to reserve judgment, because some people are not as strong, or they don't have the resources, and mainly they don't have the support. They don't have the community support. Like, okay, for a man on the other side, oh, man, please, man, go get you another woman, or you're a punk, like, you know, man up. We shouldn't do that. Some of these females out here are worse than males in this narcissism game. And I'm speaking as a female to you females who are narcissists. Cut it out, you know. And some of these males to the females. So, yes, there are tons and there are many, many statistics of why women are in prison, because, to be honest, I mean, the rise is a major phenomenon to the country and to the studies. But they don't look at how many men are in jail because of that, because that's not something that you talk about. Oh, well, we need to get him on something harder, because we can't say, well, he finally snapped because he was being completely disrespected and dejected and emasculated in his own home. But that's real. Whether we validate that or not, that is a very real psychological oppression. And we need to respect that. We need to deal with that. There's a lot of good men in jail and prison right now over this nonsense.
Right.
And remember, when you go there, you can't take that back. You can never, ever take that back. So what we need to do possibly is institute some real laws and some amendments and some studies and put some things on the table before Congress to start looking at violence or another form of, because this is really domestic abuse. We don't want to call it that. But narcissism is another form of domestic abuse in a relationship.
Right. Right.
And once we deal with it on that level and stop putting a gender to it or a gender acceptance or gender allowance to it, more people will get the sentences that they deserve and more people will get checked. But I want to put out something I'm not hearing, and that's how narcissists isolate. They isolate the victim, pull you away from family slowly. Well, I don't like that person, or I don't want this person in my home. No real reason. I mean, you just don't. Why do you don't like them? I mean, they're awesome. They're great with the children, da-da-da. I don't like them. Okay, and so you trying to be a good husband or be a good wife, you're like, oh, okay, honey. But that one starts to turn to two, starts to turn to three. Then why do you always have to go out? Now it's like, why are you controlling? You need to calm your nerves, right? But you're not realizing what they're doing is they're picking you off from the herd. And the reason why they're doing that, because they don't want your family and your friends to check them, because they know you may not see it, or you may see it but may feel like you're powerless to change it, but your friends and your family will be all up in their stuff, all up in their Kool-Aid, as we used to say back in the day. And they know the flavors.
Seems like
okay.
Those two things would make family get up in the mix. You know,
well,
I can't come over
so.
And you can't come out. So those two things are going to make friends and family very suspicious.
You would think you would think so.
It's going to make me suspicious. I'm going to be very suspicious.
Well,
I can't come over. You can't come out. Something's wrong.
Exactly. Or why all of a sudden we stop hanging? Like, what's really going on? How come it's only just you and that person when we see you? You're the type of person that we need in this world because you care. I think we've gotten so much into the mind your own business piece that we haven't have a balance with that. Where we should be minding our business, we don't. And where we need not to be minding our business, You see what I'm saying? And we need to start involving ourselves. When you see warning signs, if you're really a friend to that person, get involved. Be involved. Now, if they shun you away, guess what? Karma doesn't have a designated menu. You get what you deserve. You get served what you deserved. You'll now be able to have the peace and say, you know what, I tried. I tried to intervene. You can't make a person. You can't lead, as they say, you can't lead the horse to the water. You can lead the horse to the water, but you can't force it to drink. Right?
Right.
So if you see these forms, if you see your friend, your buddy, don't further emasculate him. Build him up. Hey, man, I don't know what this is about, but, yo, you can crash here. You see what I'm saying? Be a friend. Be an out.
Right.
And that's really what people need. They need an out, and they're not finding it. And so the only out is out. But I always tell, and I want to end in this, anybody that's pulling you down is already beneath you. And anybody that's pulling you back is already behind you. So fly forward and fly high. You are more. And that's the key. You need to know that you're more. Build, go out. There's social media. Unfortunately, I don't like Facebook, but there's social media and there's meetups, you know, and there's groups and there's all sorts of things. Create a center refuge for yourself. Create a nucleus. If what you knew was no longer there, create one. Create a life outside of that person and start to involve yourself more and more in that life so that you'll have something else to live for. Don't let that person or that parasite really be all. Now, you asked a question. Should we heap more hurt? Some people, some narcissists are hurting, i.e. some of the children, the abused that come up to older. But then some of them, they know what they're doing. It's a game. They feed off of it. Those people don't deserve any kind of mercy. I'm not the Most High judge and jury, but I would not be quick to show that person mercy if I was in a jury of their peers, because you knew what you were doing. It is calculated the same way that a person calculates a murder. You've actually calculated a murder or a possible manslaughter because you knew that you could possibly break this person down to the point where they would want to kill themselves by default or take themselves out by default. It should be attempted manslaughter. What else are you doing besides breaking down a person to nothing if they allow it? So we need legislature, and we need to break the taboo, and we need to be involved, and we need to stop giving lip service and start giving action service.
Okay.
Well,
all right. Now we have 90 seconds left. We want to close. Mr. Harton, you have anything to say?
Yeah, I'm going to say this. The one thing that you can do once you recognize this is, as the Empress said, is to strengthen yourself.
That's right.
I think in our society, we find ourselves being trained to give over to what is called the stronger opposition, you know, those in charge or those who have that. I think we all need to exert some type of self-image, self-control, self-worth, you know, and not feed into this, you have to love this way, you have to get this way, you have to do this or believe that. Everyone should look at themselves as, you know what, whatever you bring to the table, that's what you bring, but I bring something also. I think the problem with this narcissism is that people that they feed upon lack that self-confidence. Maybe that's why they call them codependent, and then maybe that's why they go after them.
Okay. All right. So everybody, you know, we want to thank our guests for calling in, being on the air with us. And We Talk Production, thank you for allowing me to host the show. I want anybody to tune in next week, next Saturday, 8 to 9, for the Boxing Thought PT. Remember, be present in your own life.
You will not be able to stay home, brother.
Thank you.
You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox and Four Parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner, because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run, or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on the court from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
What the hell's going on here?